and welcome to the Library Cafe, a weekly program where we talk with scholars, artists, and librarians about books and books about books and information technology. Our guest today is Lawrence Webster, author of the book Under the North Light, The Life and Work of Maud and Mischa Petersham, just published by Woodstock Arts. Welcome, Lawrence.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's terrific to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. Your book is about an extraordinary husband and wife team of children's book illustrators, Maud and Mischa Petersham, who lived most of their lives in Woodstock, New York. Many of our listeners may not necessarily recognize their names, but their books will be familiar to anyone who's ever spent time in a children's book section of a public library, at least for my generation. So can you tell us in general terms who Maud and Mischa Petersham were?
Sure. They were actually very different people, one from the other. But let's start with the simple facts and figures. They were born in the late 1880s, both of them, and worked in New York in children's book illustration and later writing for about four decades in the early to mid-20th century. And this was a very yeasty time in children's book publishing in America. And they were among the pioneering children's book artists and illustrators. And in fact, Mischa is credited with helping devise some of the technology that allows cost-effective full-color printing, which we now take for granted in our books, but which used to be a very big deal. So they were very different, one from the other. You ask me who they were. Maud was raised in upstate New York primarily. She was the daughter of a Baptist minister and the descendant of Mayflower immigrants. Mm-hmm. So she had very deep Yankee roots. Yeah. On the other hand, she was one of four girls in the family, and all four of the girls went to Vassar. Mind you, this is the early part of the 20th century. The four Fuller girls graduated from Vassar in 08, 09, 11, and 12, I think, something along those lines. This was early days for women to go to college, and for four girls from one family is quite extraordinary. So that's Maud. Let's set her aside for a minute. Okay. Mischa was born just a year earlier in the Hungarian steppes, in what was then the Austro-Hungarian Empire under the Habsburgs in 1888. And he always wanted to be an artist, but he was from a pretty poor family. And because of his talent and sheer grit and determination, he got a scholarship to what was then the Budapest Royal Academy of Fine and Applied Art. And he went there with great work and diligence, got a very rigorous education, technical and otherwise, and immediately left in order not to be drafted by the Habsburg army.
Yeah, this was the First World War.
This was just prior to the First World War. He emigrated to London in 1911 and left there and came on our shores through Ellis Island in 1912. And it's extraordinary even that Maud and Mischa met, if you consider the two different ways they got to New York. Maud was in art school right after Vassar. And living at one of those lovely women's hotels that existed for clubs, you know?
Yeah, they still exist, evidently. I've had students that have worked for me that have gone off to live, and at least one I know there is still in the village. I can't think of the name of it, but at least 5-6 years ago, it was still there.
I remember when I was a young person in the 60s, just graduated from college. That's what young women did. You went and lived in a sort of controlled environment in New York. But there they were, and they were both hired by an Austrian immigrant named Arthur Wiener, who started one of the first advertising art studios in New York. So there were Maud and Mischa, completely different people, sitting across a drawing board in a big drafting room. And the rest is history.
You know, I mentioned that people would recognize their books. Can you name a few of the books that people might know?
The one that won a Caldecott Medal, and for those listeners who aren't, you know, aficionados of children's books, I should say that the Caldecott Medal is like the Academy Award for illustrated children's books. It's given every year since 1937 by the American Library Association for the best illustrated book of the year. And Maud and Mischa won one Caldecott honor, but one Caldecott medal for a book called The Rooster Crows, which came out in 1946. And it is just a book of American rhymes and jingles with their characteristic illustrations. In my opinion, it's not their very best work, mm-hmm. but it is the one that is still in print because of the Caldecott Medal.
Yeah.
Other books that people have said, oh, I've seen that, as I'm out talking about and showing these books to people, mm-hmm. are their stories from the Old Testament. They illustrated Bible stories in very knowledgeable and sensitive ways, unsentimentally and quite beautifully. And a lot of people have recognized those books. And The Christ Child, which is the Nativity story, also illustrated in this glowing semi-folk, semi-art deco style that people will recognize. If they, once they look at the picture, they will say, oh yeah, I see that. I've seen that. I know that. Beyond that, surprisingly to me, their work is no longer really well known. Some of their contemporaries, the Provencans, Juan de Gag, are still known by people who study children's literature and still found on the shelves of bookshops and libraries.
Yeah.
Mishka's work, for some reason that I can't quite pin down, I'd love input on that, hasn't lasted in the popular imagination in the same way. It may be just luck, or the luck of the draw, and maybe this work will bring attention to them again. I don't know.
There is the exhibition we should mention at Woodstock Artists Association that's up, I think, through the end of December.
What's in the exhibit are some things that have never been seen before. Some original paintings by both Maud and Mishka, some really quite remarkable watercolors, skillful, sensitive, subtle work. And also some family things. They made, for example, a wooden Noah's Ark for their grandchildren with painting on it, and inside are stuffed animals made by Maud. And Father Noah and Mother Noah, they're a little worse for wear. I had to wrest them from the hands of the great-great-grandchildren to put them in the exhibit. Something else in the exhibit that's a lot of fun and can't be seen anywhere else is a ceramic creche with the whole nativity scene in a box built by Mishka and each ceramic figure by Maud. And again, the figures are a little worse for wear. The cow's horns have been knocked off and the sheep's ears are a little raggedy. But quite an interesting assemblage to look at, and a number of dummies and sketches for books. I've tried to show in that exhibit how they worked.
Yeah, the process.
Interesting process that they had, yeah.
I was going to mention, the one book I was familiar with, I think, was The Poppy Seed Cakes. It sort of jumped out at me when I saw the illustrations. And apart from the works they authored themselves, they illustrated hundreds of books that they didn't author, so that most people will have come across as children, certainly in the 20th century, middle of the 20th century, examples of their illustrations in other kinds of books, science books and other kinds of books.
Exactly, yeah. In their early career, from about 1917, when they got their first commissions, through 1930, they didn't write. They hadn't tried writing. And they had dozens of commissions. I think they were very hardworking and got famous quickly for being available and technically correct and delivering on deadline. I honestly think that's why they got so much work. And yes, there are dozens of textbooks, readers, and things like anthologies. There's one called 24 Unusual Stories for Boys and Girls.
Yeah.
And then The Poppy Seed Cakes, which was a real breakthrough book in so many ways, not just for them, but in terms of design, color process. It was published by Doubleday, which was one of the very first. It was actually the second publishing company in New York to have a separate children's book department and editor. And their famous editor was Mae Massey, who took Maud, really discovered Maud and Mishka, and took them under her wing and enabled them to do their very best work. That's the way Maud described her. Maud said, "The stars came out for us in Mae's office." She also discovered Ludwig Bemelmans, the author of Madeline, and a number of other important people.
Yeah, she was a librarian, wasn't she? I mean, before she became a publisher?
Children's publishing and children's librarianship grew up at roughly the same time.
Yeah.
And there was, depends on your point of view, either collusion or collaboration between the two fields ongoing, and still is. And still is. Children's publishing and children's librarianship are wedded at the hip. They're sister interests.
And you're a librarian also.
Yeah, and proud to say so.
Yes. Yeah, it's a noble profession. How did you come to be interested in doing this book?
Well, gosh, it's a tough question. Obviously, people have asked, and I ought to have 30-second answer. I don't. I'm warning you. It's not a 30-second answer. I've always been interested in the Petershams. Let's start there. And my parents and Maud and Mischka were contemporaries and good friends. So when I was a little girl in Woodstock, I could run down the mountain and run into Maudie and Mischka's house to visit my friend, their granddaughter, Mary, who's my contemporary. Mm-hmm. So I've known them. I knew them as a child. And you know how that kind of knowledge is. I took them for granted until I was a grown-up, middle-aged person and thought, wow, they were really remarkable people, weren't they? And I've always been interested in the nature of their marriage and collaboration. The way they worked always seemed so romantic and interesting to me. We were allowed in the studio, and I should stop and describe it for a minute. It was one of those classic Woodstock studios with a huge window, multi-paned window facing north. So the north light, which is the shadow-free light that artists like to work with, came in, and they had tilted drawing boards facing one another. So if you can picture that, they looked at each other across the drawing board under the north light for 40 years doing this amazing work. Maud was left-handed, Mischka was right-handed, so the light cast no shadows on their work from their hand. Mm-hmm. They had music playing. The studio was full of toys and reference books and all kinds of research materials. And they would laugh and talk and work together in there for hours. And to us, it seemed like they were doing magic things and having fun. And so this was one of my childhood introductions into the nature of work. Fancy that, huh? So I've always had a kind of interest in the collaborative creative relationship that they had. Beyond that, as I have learned more and more about children's books and always have enjoyed them, I realize the real beauty and extraordinary skill of the Petershams and have always thought they didn't get enough attention. And one day, I was back up in Woodstock, I think visiting at that point. I hadn't yet moved back. And I was saying, you know, I'd really like to do a book about Maud and Mischka Petersham. And Weston and Julia Blelock, who are the brother-sister publishers of Woodstock Arts, very fine small press in Woodstock, kind of precipitately said, oh, write it. We'll publish it. That doesn't happen, you know, often. So I thought, uh-oh, I'd better do this. Yeah. Joy, I discovered that the material available to any researcher was legion. The de Grummond Collection of Children's Literature at the University of Southern Mississippi is an archive of children's literature that is unparalleled in the world, certainly in the nation. Mm-hmm. And Maud had left all their papers to the de Grummond. There were more than 30 boxes of everything from fan mail to formal speeches and letters from the White House to scrapbooks full of clippings and handwritten notes of what Maud had to take to the Caldecott speech. It was fantastic, as well as dummies and color separations and a lot of process material. So I spent 2 weeks there just buried in the Petershams. I almost felt like they had come alive right there in the library and we were hanging out together, looking at things in their handwriting. There was Mischka's childhood notes in Hungarian, you know, amazing things. So there was that. And then there was Mary Petersham, their granddaughter, and a friend of mine whom I hadn't been in touch with in several years. And I called her up and said, Mary, look, I think I'm writing a book about Maudie and Mischka. What have you got? And she said, well, come on down and look under my bed. She had several big storage bins of, again, remarkable material. So it was a researcher's dream. And I often said, gee, I wish I'd started this project when I needed to write a PhD dissertation.
Yeah, the book is very well researched. That jumps out at you when you start into it. It's a really scholarly biography.
Or less dryly than many dissertations.
That's true, and I wanted to ask about that. Admittedly, the Petershams seem to have been very happy people, you know, very lucky in many ways, who lived rather quietly and just went about doing their work in their efficient professional way. And ordinarily, one wouldn't think this was the stuff of ripping biography, you know. I mean, there wasn't much conflict in their lives. However, the way you handle the material as an author does completely draw me in as a reader into this world of theirs and made it exceedingly interesting. And when I thought about this, I could see, you know, it had to do with the style and the voice you adopt in the book. You know, this isn't written in a removed, scholarly, dry, you know, way at all, although it is, as I say, a scholarly work. It's well-researched, it's well-noted. But the voice you adopt is very much like the voice discovered in so much children's literature, where everything is presented as a kind of wonder, as if things like this had never happened before. And this seems to make the ordinary seem extraordinary, or maybe I should say it brings out the marvelous quality of everyday things. And I wonder, was this a conscious decision of yours? Because it makes for a very engaging as well as a kind of charming read.
That might be the nicest thing anybody's said about the book so far. I do feel a sense of wonder at their life story, at the story of their lives and work. I think it's not ordinary things to have not only a happy marriage that lasts forever, but a happy marriage between two people of vastly different backgrounds, vastly different temperaments, and in a time that was full of turmoil and uncertainty between the Depression and the World Wars, and have this glowing contribution just continually pouring out of their studio. And I can tell you from personal experience and also from a number of people who knew them, contemporaries who knew them, the household was a warm, inviting place. Mm-hmm. And I find you can say this is ordinary things, and it is without, I would say relatively without conflict, but isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah, it is. One thing that is extraordinary, certainly about Maud's background there, is that she seems to have come from a family of very strong and accomplished women. I mean, apart from the fact that her sisters all went to Vassar, there were other women in the family, weren't there? Her aunt, particularly, played an important role in their lives, didn't she?
Yeah, that's another, I think, interesting thing about this story and this era in American culture is not everything relied on the nuclear family. Mm-hmm. You know how it is today and in our generation, yours and mine, that it was always your mother's fault, essentially. And even today, I know young mothers who feel like they're responsible for every single aspect of their children's well-being and future and temperament and behavior and, you know. It's really exhausting to be a mom today with the expectations. And in Maud's time, and I can't speak for Mishka's childhood in the same way, but in Maud's childhood, the extended family was expected to step right in. There were aunts, there were grandparents, there were extra people. And when Maud said she didn't want to go back home after the summer, she didn't want to go back with her parents, she wanted to stay with Auntie at the farm in upstate New York, that was not considered a problem. That was fine. There was nothing unusual or pathological or questionable about her mother's love. It was expected that extended families step right in and adults and children mingle in a way that I think is different from the expectations we have today.
So their artistic training, interestingly, was very different, wasn't it?
That's an interesting question, too. Maud said, well, I took a couple art courses at Vassar, but there, you know, there wasn't much there. And then I went to this really easy school in New York, and that wasn't very demanding. And then I met Mishka, and I learned everything. And Mishka had been to this very old school, rigorous training.
Yes, classically trained.
And I have his sketchbooks are in the exhibition, and you can see he learned to do everything. Draw, architectural renderings, hand-colored, careful painting, free watercolors, there's oil paintings. It's just remarkable. So he knew how to do pretty much everything, and he probably knew a lot of theory of color and composition and all the things that people learned. And Maud had ideas and kind of a whimsical, I don't know, but I'm guessing, a rather unorthodox view of the world. And Mishka took her under his wing, partly as artistic mentor and then partly as a suitor for 3 years before she married him. So his courtship included was wrong with her work and making it better. Credited him with that. It very gently and very nicely. I mean, it wasn't a matter of, and then he made me what I am. It was more a matter of, he really taught me how to do the things I needed to know how to do.
So what was the art scene like in New York at the time they were there together? I know you mentioned Arthur Wiener and the IAS.
Let's set the scene. 1914, they met at Wiener's International Art Studio, which was on 42nd Street, right across from Bryant Park in the Aeolian Hall building, still there. Just to give you a picture if you're a New Yorker. Yeah. Wiener was from Vienna, and his partners were representatives of modernist Jugendstil style. Recognize it with the hard edges and the, well, what we think of today as modernist. Another person that the Petershams met and mentored there was Paul T. Frankel, one of the important American modernist furniture designers from California. And he actually spent time with them in Woodstock, thereby hangs a different tale. But so the environment they were in this studio, where probably German, Hungarian, and English were all spoken in equal amounts, was European modern. At the same time, 1913, the Armory Show in New York, the seminal event in the New York art scene, in the American art scene, hit. And this was the very first time most Americans had seen Gauguin or Renoir, Picasso, or any of the people who are now just, you know, canonical artists.
Yes.
That's the show where Teddy Roosevelt walked through it and said, that's not art. So the conversation in New York at the time was pretty rich and pretty yeasty around the entire question of, so what is art and how far can we push the envelope and how do you get educated in this? This was the beginning of modern art and the beginning of New York as a major center. Maude Mischka lived in Greenwich Village, and who was at their house and how they talked about what they were talking about, we don't know. But I can speculate with some confidence that the conversations around what is art and what is good were pretty rich and pretty interesting and kind of lively.
And then they moved to Woodstock. And what was Woodstock like at this time?
They started coming up to Woodstock in 1920. And built their house and moved into the house there in 1924. Woodstock then had had a generation of art, being an artist colony. In 1902 and 3, Ralph Redcliffe Whitehead founded Birdcliff, which was a semi-utopian arts and crafts colony on the mountain above Woodstock on the north side. And he had a lot of very definite ideas. He was a Ruskinite from England. And from Birdcliff flowed a number of people away and founded the Maverick Colony, Hervey White, and then a whole lot of other artists, John F. Carlson, John Carroll, their legion. And the Art Students League was founded during that time. So by 1920, Woodstock was a real hotbed of, again, artistic activity. There was, as today, there was a very strong New York City-Woodstock connection. So the Petershams mostly always had a small pied-à-terre in downtown Manhattan. Mm-hmm. They could go, but they did live the bulk of their time in Woodstock. So they lived in the midst of a lot of very exciting artistic activity wherever they were, and they quietly contributed to it.
Yes, in terms of the contribution, I mean, just the artistic contribution, one could say that if they didn't change the way children's books were illustrated, they certainly added something that wasn't there before, didn't they?
Yes, I think a couple things about that. If you look in particular, I'm glad you brought up the poppy seed cakes, mm-hmm. which they didn't write, but they illustrated. And if you look at that book, every single thing about the book is designed. They did the page layouts, and the text is in special boxes, and there are recurring motifs, little tiny things that children can watch as you go along. Where's that duck again? You know, kind of thing. Yeah. And I think this was one of the very first books, not only to use this kind of internationalist folk design, which is particularly visible in the poppy seed cakes, mm-hmm. but also, if you look closely, there's some of the modernist conventions in particularly water and things like that. But also the whole book design, the design of the total book. And I think that was their partnership with the editor, Mae Massey, in part. But I also think Petershams brought a great deal to picture book design. Their later books, slightly later in the 20s, which were much more text-heavy. I'm thinking of Nursery Friends from France and Tales Told in Holland. These were two books. They went to Holland and to France to research these and came back with extensive sketchbooks. But every page is a work of art with text and pictures. And if you flip through Under the North Light, through my book, there are a few examples on the pages of how they did this, the integration of text and story. I think this was very new at the time. They weren't the only ones, but they were right out front people who were doing this.
We had a guest on last week, Adam Michaels, who is a designer, and he's trying to reintroduce an idea of integrated design back into the book publishing business, at least for certain kinds of texts. And interestingly, this does now, maybe partly because of the influence of the Petershams, seem to be one corner of the publishing world where this sort of close collaboration between authors, designers, and publishers has been a kind of given, I mean, in children's book publishing. And Maud actually talks about this, you mentioned in the book, didn't she, in her idea of what she called building a book?
Yes, she did. She said, I learned this. I had a conversation with her niece, who is also an artist, who talked about the way Maud built a book. She worked with real dummies. They had beautifully bound blank books in the same size and pagination as the final book would be. And she would start by pasting in very tiny handwritten tracing paper ideas of the story and where that would go in relation to the pictures. There would be sketches. These dummies are just actual remarkable works of art. And then she often said, if you can't get started, start in the middle, which I thought was intriguing. And in fact, that helped me while I was finishing up this book because I had some sticky moments. And I thought, what would Maud say? She would say, okay, you're having trouble with this chapter, go to the middle. And I would actually do that, which was quite fun.
It seems to have worked out because it's a beautiful book all around. I mean, apart from, you know, the content itself, the design, the production values you can see, and the craftsmanship that went into it make it really a nice object.
I wish I could take credit for that. But first of all, Weston and Julia Blelock of Woodstock Arts are really dedicated to producing fine books as objects. You know, they haven't lost the fact that we still love books as objects and it's okay to make new ones, first of all. Secondly, the book designer, Abigail Sturgis, is a freelance book designer in New York, also with deep Woodstock roots and a lifelong acquaintance of mine. She designs a lot of exhibition catalogs and work for art publishers like Rizzoli and Abrams. Mm-hmm. She brought an art book sensibility to this book that I'm really grateful for, because I think without her hand, it would have been a nice book, but it wouldn't have been this book. She really, again, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it quite that way, but it is a good example of collaboration among lots of people.
You mentioned Maud and Mishka's contribution to the printing processes was considerable that were developing in the 1920s and 1930s.
Yeah, and there are a couple of printers, William Glazer and Charles Stringer, who are credited. They were involved with a lot of the mass market children's books that were starting to come out in the teens and 20s and 30s. And they were credited with making it possible to produce a color illustrated book that regular people could afford. And Mishka used to take the color separations. They made their own separations. They hired a Woodstocker to help, which was a very tedious process in those days. Mishka would go sit for days with the printer as proofs were coming off the press, making sure things were lined up properly and making suggestions about minor adjustments. And then when Stringer or Glazer had an idea about, well, let's try acetate instead of zinc, Mishka would run home and give it a try. It's like a laboratory for them, and come back with suggestions and ways it could be easier and ways it could be harder, ways it could be better.
You know, we have in the Vassar Special Collections Library a special collection of children's books called the Louise Seaman Bechtel Collection, and I wonder, who was Louise Seaman Bechtel, and what was her association with the Petershams?
She was the first head of a children's book department in an American publisher, and she rose to that position a couple years before Mae Massey went to Doubleday. And Louise Seaman Bechtel was, again, one of the seminal pioneering figures in children's publishing. Maud and Mishka knew her and did a little bit of work for her company, but didn't have the relationship with her that they did with Mae Massey. But they remained friendly acquaintances throughout their lives. I have a long handwritten note from Louise Bechtel to Maudie and Mischka right after they won the Caldecott, you know, praising their work and saying really fun things that I agree with. She didn't quite say, gee, this book isn't your best work. She said something more along the lines of, these awards are particularly wonderful because it reminded me to go back and look at all your work. She was a very important person in the American children's book. I think, again, along with Mae Massey and a few visionary editors and librarians, the reason we have a rich tradition of illustrated books that we have.
You mentioned in passing that the Petershims would do research on some of the material. And in the book you mentioned Maud actually used the Vassar Library on occasion in her own research process.
Yes. She was a dedicated Vassar alumna. I think the rumor has it, and I can't corroborate this with anything in writing, but people in the family remember Maud as cutting Vassar out of her life when they started admitting men.
Yes, well, she did give her collection to the University of Southern Mississippi.
I think she felt, first of all, I know that Dr. DeGrummond, who started that collection in the 60s, was very skillful at soliciting living authors and publishing companies and really dedicated to specifically a children's literature collection, where the Vassar Special Collections Library had a lot of other things on its mind. So I think Maud felt that that might be just a better placement. Can I ask you a question?
Oh, yeah, sure.
You perused the book. What's the one thing you think is most important or interesting about it?
Well, I thought for me it was your style. Like I say, you know, it's a biography, but it's a biography of two people who didn't have a lot of conflict in their life. The style does draw one in, and it's a style that draws from so much children's writing. I don't know if it has to do, as I say, with a conscious decision on your part, or if it has to do with the fact that, you know, you've been exposed to so much children's literature over time. But it works very well, especially as you're talking about two children's book illustrators. So that's what really struck me about it. It's not every day you come across a sort of unique voice like this. It wouldn't be unique if you were consciously writing, you know, for 13-year-olds, but as a scholarly work, it is unusual. So
it's lovely. I always thought scholarly writing ought to be accessible if it was really good. I had a mentor years and years ago who was a children's book writer and editor, and she said, if you can write about it for children, you really understand it. And she was referring to things like nuclear physics.
The other thing that I should say jumps out at you as soon as you pick the book up and open it are the illustrations. They're so composed and the colors are so vibrant. You know, it brings back that whole world that doesn't seem to permeate children's literature so much anymore. Styles have changed. This kind of illustration, it wasn't just the Petershims. They seem to have had an influence on lots of other illustrators doing this kind of book.
Yes, I think that's right. And trends are trends, but yeah, there's no question about that. One of the things I guess I'd like to come back to is about their research process in general. I think they were really, I want to say, intellectually rigorous. Not in today's graduate school terms, which is a whole other world, but both of them had a real classical education. And if you look at the nonfiction series, the 24 storybook of books, which are, you know, the storybook of coal, the storybook of iron, the storybook of wheat.
Yeah.
This was before the World Book Encyclopedia or lots of illustrated nonfiction for children. This was meticulously researched and accurate. There are schematic drawings, for example, of how an oil well pumps oil out of the ground and it goes over to the refinery and into your car. Yeah. That would work today as accurate and just fine. And this is before, certainly, obviously, way before the internet and the integration of visual and textual information. And I think that particular body of work of theirs is absolutely remarkable. And I remember experiencing these books when I was a child. So in the Storybook of Houses, for example, you come away understanding all different kinds of human housing with accurate knowledge, but you also wanted to climb into every picture and be a part of it. So each page told a little visual story while you're learning things, you being a 10-year-old or 9-year-old.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a really interesting body of their work for some education theorists to take a good look at again and see what they introduced that maybe we hadn't seen before.
Sure. And it's a sort of truism that people overlook that good design requires research. Ideas don't come to artists from the clouds. And you can see that as part of their process here, their overall process. Apart from the fact that collaboration is so important, research is important also.
Right. I really think that it's not just research of the visual data, which they did magnificently. I think they could be textbook examples of that for anybody working today, but also factual data. Maud said, oh, we're going to write a book about gold mining. I'm going to go learn everything I can about gold mining. And she'd be the one who sat in the library and read up. And so they were conscientious as well as creative. I think the whole book for me is an integration of, not opposites, but integration of things that are often in tension. Like, if you look at their picture books that they wrote, there's this great sense of adventure. You never see parents going with little kids around the world. The kids are off by themselves having great adventures. No fear. But at the same time, there's this implicit sense of great safety and safe harbor. You couldn't go off and have an adventure if you didn't have that incredibly soft, cuddly bed to go home to, you know? So that's one thing. Another is the integration of the mystery, spiritual matters. I don't want to say necessarily religion, but there's an honoring of powers greater than ourselves, if you will. But also science, technology, and progress, huge respect for that. Mm-hmm. So beautifully integrated in all their work, really. And then there's that sense of community and family and tribe, along with individuality and go on, do your thing, be you. And I think that those themes just resound for all 40 years of their work, both in the visual illustrations and in the work that they wrote. And to me, that's the remarkable thing. And it may be, in one sense, if this were a true scholarly work or a dissertation, I would have to be finding ways that the Petersham work is derivative or less than interesting or something's wrong with it.
Or reflects, in a sense, the time or some aspect of the time. And this was a time of two world wars, after all. And interestingly, you know, the world provides a nice counter for children and, as you say, sort of safe harbor from that.
Yeah, despite all the turmoil outside. And they were not immune to that, for certain. Mishka was always packing things up to send off to Hungary, which was in its own turmoil throughout his lifetime. And The Rooster Crows, their Caldecott book, came about. Maud said their son was in the Army Air Corps during World War II in the Pacific, and they worried about him. And she said she'd lie awake nights worrying and try and take her mind off it by remembering rhymes and jingles that she'd grown up with. And that grew into the book.
And, you know, the internationalist emphasis in so many of their books sort of works against the sort of isolationist impulses in American culture, doesn't it? Wasn't Mishka in danger of being arrested as an enemy alien when the First World War got underway?
Yes, and well, Arthur Weiner, the person who was responsible for them meeting, was deported in 1919 after having been here because of this great fear. Yes, Mishka, even though he had been naturalized and was a real, the kind of patriot that was just grateful for, he considered America was responsible for everything good that had ever happened to him, I think. And interestingly, later in life, he was a devout Republican who, solid gold, I like Ike lapel pin, I remember this, and really in every way patriotic. There are books that they did in the 1940s, a series on various Americana kinds of books, History of the Presidents, the Story of America's Stamps, just ring with appreciation of America. And yet, it's not jingoistic.
Yeah.
So yes, that's another interesting juxtaposition that they have, is intense patriotism and appreciation for this nation, but an understanding of where it sits in the world.
So I want to thank you, Lawrence, for joining us to talk about your book, Under the North Light, The Life and Work of Maud and Mishka Petersham, published by Woodstock Arts.
It's been a great treat. I really appreciate having this kind of time to talk about it. And I must say to you that the attention with which you read the book before we talked means a lot to me.
Oh, well, thanks. As I say, it just drew me in. You know, you pick it up and you can't put it down. And the illustrations are just absolutely wonderful. It makes one want to go out and dig up all the old Petersham's books. And it is a wonderful little book. It's wonderfully crafted and illustrated, and it will be of interest of anyone, I think, interested in classic children's book publishing in the 20th century. So thanks very much. And just a reminder again, there is an exhibit on the Petershams at the Woodstock Artist Association Gallery, and that'll be up until December 31st.